Chapter 2. Vorla, High Priestess of the Steppe. My sorcery is almost spent. My books have been burned. What does that leave? Just a weak old woman waiting to feel a blade at her throat. The gods played a cruel joke when they chose me as the Steppe's last chance for vengeance. I shift in my chair, throwing shadows across the octagonal chamber. The floor gleams in the torchlight like a piece of perfect marble, but I've walked across it many times and know the truth. Hack's throne room is carpeted with human teeth, hammered and smooth to a sheen. They spiral across the room in their thousands, circling a thick, pitted grindstone. The teeth are only a small reminder of the lives Hack has taken. I doubt he considers them more than decoration, but I feel the pain of every sundered soul. Sometimes I run my hands over them, tracing the contours and cracks, recalling names and whispering a promise. I will avenge you. For a long time I did not know how I would achieve such a feat, but now, finally, it is in reach. The throne beside me is the carcass of a great beast, a beautiful feline thing from the time before chaos. After killing it, Hack hollowed out the corpse with his bare hands and had it cast in brass. Now it hunches over him, frozen in an eternal roar. The warlord sits silently and hasn't moved for an hour, but I know he's awake. He's long beyond such mortal frailties as sleep. There are weapons everywhere, but if I took a single step towards him, my game would end. I must bide my time. Vengeance is so close, I can feel it in my tingling palms. Hack's generals have yet to arrive, and my only entertainment comes from his hounds. Most of them are as motionless as their master, slumped at his feet, but a few circle me, their claws scraping and clattering across the gleaming floor. Even after all these years, they've not given up hope that Hack might rethink my importance and present them with a meal. They're not real dogs, of course, but hulking reptilian things, the colour of flayed muscle and as tall as a man. Their enormous canine heads are crowned with horns, and their bodies have been bloated into a grotesque parody of nature, torn out of shape by heaving muscle. Smoke leaks from their jaws as they pad back and forth, their eyes always locked on me. The spiked collars at their throats crush the magic out of me, and they stink of the hell pits that spawned them, but I've become fascinated by them. There's a mystery to them that I can't fathom. Hack loves them. When slaves become too weak to work, he feeds them, still living, to the hounds. I've been forced to endure the screams more times than I wish to recall, and as the slaves die, I always keep my eyes locked on Hack's. They burn with pride as his hounds do their work, the pride of a devoted father. The thought fascinates me. I can't stop thinking about it. There seems to be something profound just beyond my comprehension. This murdering, poisonous monster cares for something. What does that mean? What does it mean for his wretched subjects? These gore-hungry executioners own everything now. They own those pitiful few of us who still live on the Carvel Steppe. Slaughter, hunger, and fear are the only things we will ever know now. Few of us can recall the days when animals like Hack's great cat still breathed and hunted, moving through a realm unshackled by Corn's brass towers. The monster sitting in the throne is all we have, and he loves something. What does that mean? The door swings open and Hack's 8 generals march into the chamber, paying me no attention as they approach the throne. A more wretched group of stooges and villains never drew breath, but, as always, they adopt the mannerisms of proud, disciplined knights. Their twisted red and brass armour flashes in the torchlight as they drop to their knees and rest their foreheads against their axes. How furious they would be if they knew that a frail, human woman like me had written their death warrants. Not only have I convinced Hack to call them home, but I have also convinced him that they are worthless. I have driven a blade so neatly between their shoulder blades that they did not even feel it. Hack remains motionless for a few more seconds. Then his ember-red eyes flicker into life. The Lord of the Blood Creed is still a man of sorts, I suppose, but he has more than a foot in the realm of demons. The thick, serrated plates of his armour cover most of his body, but his head is horribly exposed. Years of dark worship have earned him a pair of bestial ridged horns that swoop up from his brutal, heavy brow. His face has the grey, greasy pallor of a month-old corpse. For a while he ignores the newcomers and stares at me. My fear was long ago matched by hate, and I hold his gaze. But I can't read the thought in those inhuman eyes. Has he seen through my ruse? Will he turn his generals on me? He waves a hand, allowing them to rise and bark out their tallies of atrocities, presenting them as proud victories. They list every head they've taken for their lord, but I've already told him a convenient truth, that they have nothing to boast of. They no longer have an enemy to fight. This kingdom is no longer on its knees. It is supine.
I have tightened the yoke on the cities of Iphilaus and Chias, cries one of them in strident tones.
His massive frame is encased in jagged brass armour, and he has the pure white pelt of a wild cat slung across his shoulder.
Their princes will not ask you for leniency again.
He hurls a sack to the foot of the throne, and bloodless heads spill out, tumbling across the floor with a sickening series of thuds. Another of the warriors strides forward. He wears a heavy, blood-drenched cloak that leaves a crimson smear behind him as he walks. His gauntleted hands are locked around a demon-forged glaive that shimmers with inner fire, revealing a cruel leer deep inside his hood.
The Volponi River now runs red, Lord Hach. The Volponi knights seemed unsure whether they should kneel to you, so I helped them decide and remove their knees. 3,000 of them are now feeding the fish at the bottom of their sacred river.
As he listens to their boasts, Hack leans forward in his throne and starts to tap the blade of his sword against the floor. I notice that Hack has started to tremble, and I edge back into my stone chair. His growing anger would be obvious to anyone with sense, but the generals carry on oblivious, crowing over their petty victories.
Hack is a Goliath. There is something almost bovine about his armour-clad bulk. But when he finally explodes, it's with surprising speed.
The general nearest to the throne topples back into the others as his head flies off, removed by one clean swipe of Hack's sword. The warlord roars as he storms across the room to grab the severed head and smash it against the wall. The others try to raise their weapons, but Hack attacks them with the head, slamming it into their faces until it becomes a bloody lump of bone and metal. He roars as he kills, and then, when every one of them is dead, he hurls his dripping weapon at his throne, where it bursts like a flagon of wine. I feel a mixture of nausea and pride at what I've done. He's not finished. Still roaring, Hak strides across the chamber and gouges the wall with his horns, sending wood and masonry clattering across the floor. Then he turns, panting like an animal, and locks his gaze on me. I scramble backwards, but there's no escape. The doors are unlocked, but even if I could get through them, where would I go? He crosses the chamber and stares at me, blood dripping from his horns.
You were right again,
he says finally.
They found nothing. They failed.
His voice is a low growl that makes my language as vile as his own.
What else do you know?
He asks. I'm terrified, but even now, he won't hurt me, I'm sure of it. As the hounds throw themselves around the chamber, snapping and snarling, he bats them away, sending them sprawling across the floor. What do you want to know? I ask. He snarls and jabs one of his bloody, brass-plated fingers at my forehead.
No games!
Why would I tell you anything more? I ask, playing a fool, playing along with his lie. He relaxes visibly, thinking he still has me in his power. He points his sword at a space in the floor of teeth.
It's not finished. You know who's next.
He leans close, dripping blood onto my face.
I'll make an exception and kill them slowly.
For a moment, I allow myself to imagine that his words are true, that I have a family to save, that they're still alive somewhere, waiting for my powers as a sorcerer to buy their freedom. I picture their trusting, beautiful faces, and it almost breaks me. My eyes fill with tears, and the idiot thinks it's because I'm afraid for them. He thinks I don't know. They are long dead. His breathing quickens as I nod. I sneer at his butchered generals. They were wasting your time. They lacked the wit to find the real threat. I look beyond him, out through one of the narrow windows. But there is still an enemy. There is a way you could shine. His eyes blaze, and he moves to grab me, stopping himself at the last minute, as though he's afraid of shattering a precious jewel.
And if I slay this enemy?
If you could slay the man I've seen, your future will be secure. I glance at the sign of the blood god Khorne carved into the back of his throne. You will have served your god well. He'll be in no doubt as to which of his lords should rule this land. You'll become lord of the Carvel Step. He growls again, and I wonder if he might finally kill me. But no, he's just overcome with excitement. He's picturing his peers, all the other lords vying for control of the step, and thinking of how he will feel when they kneel before him.
Show me.
He sounds awed. I shoo him away like a dog, and, incredibly, he backs away, taking his hounds with him and sitting back on his throne. I take a cloak from one of the corpses and fling it around myself with a flamboyant gesture, as though it's a beautiful robe. My sense of the theatrical has not entirely left me. Then I walk to the centre of the chamber and climb up onto the grindstone. It's a huge ring of pitted granite, 5 feet high and almost as thick. I wince as I haul myself up onto it, but the thought of what comes next gives me strength. For one ridiculous moment, I wait for the musicians to start, but then I remember that they're all dead. I look at Hak, unsure what to do. He's hunched forward in his throne, holding back his hounds and staring at me with such devotion that I almost laugh. With the hounds restrained, a ghost of my power returns. I start to hum the song of summoning and beg my body for forgiveness as I subject it to another ordeal. My muscles remember what I do not, and as I start to dance, I hear the dead musicians in my head, willing me to succeed. The whole performance is quite ironic. These meat-headed morons despise magic, but they can't remove it fully from their towers any more than they can bar the passage of the air. As my stiff, bruised limbs twist themselves into the old shapes, a breeze springs up around the grindstone, snapping through my borrowed cloak and whipping up the fragments of broken wall. It's no natural breeze, and as I look over at Hach, I feel the urge to laugh. To leave such sorcery unpunished is clearly a torment for him. It only takes a few moments for the images to appear. My mumbled verses become an impassioned hymn, and the breeze turns into a whirl of places and scenes. I spin faster, and Hach rises from his throne, staring in wonder at the figure forming in the tempest, a great lord clad from head to toe in gleaming armour. His face is hidden behind a smooth, expressionless mask, and he carries a great rune inscribed Warhammer. He's leading a vast host of golden knights into battle, some borne on wings of lightning, and all of them wielding hammers that flash with the light of the storm. I've known of his coming for weeks, but now I see him, I'm as enraptured as Hach. The lord's armor sparks and flickers as he moves, charged with some kind of divine energy, but it's his demeanor that shocks me. I've never seen anyone move through a battle with such solemnity. He strides calmly through the fighting, untouched by the violence and corruption that surround him. Great chunks of the ground are being torn free and hurled up towards the sky, but he maintains a cool, regal majesty. As I study him, a painful thought creeps into my mind. It's that most treacherous of worms. Hope.
Is this him? Is this the warlord I must face? Hach staggers towards the apparition, reaching through the flashing lights. Who is he?
My plans are forgotten. I stare in wonder. He is called Tylos.